I had many things I wanted to talk about before I got all involved in technology, so give me a second to reconnect to my own thoughts. And I think that's actually been one of the main things that happened with me over the past year, was to reconnect with my own thoughts, to reconnect with what it was that I saw as valuable in the life, to understand more about how I fit and how I was working in my environment. And at the same time, it was a marvelous opportunity to understand what was important and what was not important. I don't know about you, but I have a problem with determining in my own life what's most important and what's really not important. And I would just allow myself to be concerned about whatever it was that would come to me. But over the past year, I've learned a lot about only accepting that which is interesting to me, which is acceptable to me. And then in that regard, to be of service according to what I am and what I am capable. Now, one of the most significant things that occurred last year was the utter and complete collapse of the, I suppose, system of arrangement financially, economically. At the same time, there is this enormous problem with environment. These two factors have put such an enormous pressure on the world that we are being forced to change. We are being forced to adapt. We are being forced to come to the point where we very carefully and very seriously understand our position as human beings. I have seen in the past that people were not so careful, were not so concerned with their position as responsible human beings. Certainly and naturally, people were concerned about their families. I mean, even this person, Madoff, who probably is one of the biggest thieves in the history of mankind, who has stolen billions, perhaps, from charities, from his temples, who he was supporting, the religious organizations, from private investors. But when he understood, perhaps, that he was going to be caught, he made sure he protected his family. Many thieves say that they do it for their family. So there is this understanding even amongst incredibly big thieves, or even very little thieves, to take care of the family. So I would suppose one could say this is like a normal thing, that taking care of that environment which is right in front of us, that family which is directly in front of us. Everybody understands this importance. But to expand that understanding to the community of human beings around us is difficult. After all, why should you care from the present consciousness or from the, shall we call it, everyday mundane consciousness? Why should you care about what happens in your neighborhood or what happens in the person who lives a couple of flats down on your hallway? Or why should you care about somebody who's sitting there on the bus? You have enough to worry about. You have enough to care about. So therefore, in your own mind, you might say, I don't want to bother about that. I don't want to bother with worrying about other people. Yet, we have seen that all of the ways in which we cannot be bothered are ways in which we are directly bothered. We can see that all of the different ways in which we don't care are impetuses to understand how it's so important for us to care. For example, the perfect, most cosmic example of this is the environment. We've seen that scientists, they were predicting the global warming according to the data which were they were able to collect. And they saw it kind of like an arithmetic curve that over, let's say, 10-year period of time, so much melting took place. Over a 20-year period of time, so much melting took place. So they would predict on that basis that we had basically till the end of the century to really start worrying about water that was going to flood our coastlines and so on. Then when they got a little more data, they put it down to like 2080. Then a little bit more data, they put it down to 2060. And now they're understanding that it's not actually an arithmetic curve. It's a logarithmic curve. It's expanding exponentially. It's going much faster over time. And that you read now, half of Greenland is melting. Greenland is a very big place, covered with ice. They thought the Antarctic was not melting at the same rate. It was only the Arctic. Last year was the first year you could drive a boat across the Arctic Circle. First year. Now they see Antarctica is melting at the exact same rate as everywhere else. And that a huge shelf, it's called chunk of the ice, is going to drop off. Now just think about this. How fast, how incredibly fast this is going. And we seem to not really care. We seem to not really be concerned. Because, after all, it's not us. It's just something else. It's not so important for us to consider. But actually, here's a perfect example of how what we do affects everybody, and how not being concerned, how thinking it's not our responsibility, affects everybody. How everybody is affected by this. How the economy, just like the economy, how it's all gone to hell because of greed, because of incredible greed, because of the lack of care and concern. How this has caused all over the world an enormous economic collapse. And now what we are seeing is we are practically in the second year of a global, now it's called recession, but actually it's basically 1931. It's just that people haven't caught on yet. Or some people have caught on, but they don't want to use that. They call it the D word, depression. Because depression is such a depressing thing to talk about. Depression is depressing. And therefore, we don't want to talk about depression. But in reality, it is so. Now, I see that we are all locked into this together. When there is greed somewhere, when there is violence somewhere, when there is anger somewhere, it affects us. I see here where I live, a normally peaceful town. A normally peaceful town where there is normally not a problem. There is now an enormous problem of crime, where people who ordinarily are law-abiding people are now so desperate for money that they're figuring out ways to steal violently, smashing into homes, locking up people, throwing them on the ground, murders now. We are very much connected in this way, very much connected. When there is this anxiety, this stress, this pain, this feeling of enormous difficulty, it affects all of us. So what does it mean? And how is this relevant to us? Well, if you remember last year, I attempted to talk many times about community. I tried to revisit this theme of community. And I don't know how this theme of community could be resolved in practical action. I am not sure how it could be resolved. I was worrying about what could you do, because it all boils down to economics. It all boils down to how you're going to work together as a community. And when there's a choice, people always take the easy way out. And to work together in a community is not easy. If you think about it, it's like a marriage. Marriages are not easy. Now, always there's a honeymoon period where everything is very easy because there's all this love and all of this happiness and everything. But after a while, it boils down to learning to live with other people. Learning to live and together. Learning to live together in such a way that you can cooperate, you can compromise, You can adjust to continuously shifting situations, continuously shifting environments, where you can learn to deal with crisis in a continually shifting manner. This is an important thing. It's important to understand these various shifts and deal with them. Health. That's why the marriage vow traditionally said in happiness and distress, in sickness and health, in prosperity or poverty, make it work. Because people have a tendency, when things get difficult, to try to find the easy way out. A marriage that works is one where you don't avoid making it work. You don't avoid making everything compatible, making it under compromises, being humble, or doing whatever adjustment is required. So in our world, there was a lot of divorce, wasn't there? More and more divorce than ever before. And in economics, if there's a problem, just drop it. Don't worry about it. Nowadays, a lot of bankruptcies, people do bankruptcies because they don't want to pay their bills or they can't pay their bills, so they just say, okay, everybody else, forget it. But what's happening now is we are being forced to face these situations economically. We're being forced to face these situations. We're being forced to work it out because we can't just drop it. With the environmental changes that are being forced upon us, we can't avoid it. We're being forced to accept it. Now, usually when you're forced to deal with something, the first human reaction is to fight it, to reject it, to be angry at it, to be frustrated, to push it away. Say, it's not happening, or to ignore it completely. Because these are easier, we think, than dealing with the situation that's right in front of us. So we try to avoid it. You see that also in marriages. People find it sometimes easier to avoid things than to deal with them. Because dealing with them takes courage. Avoiding them doesn't take courage. You can just walk away or look another way or pretend it's not there. Pretend it's not happening. But right now you can't pretend that global changes are not happening. It's becoming too obvious, unless you're really a dull person. You can't pretend that economic crisis is not there. Maybe it hasn't hit you yet, but it will. It must. It's hitting everybody. So here we are in a situation where we're going to be forced to accept the fact that we have to deal with it. We have to deal with these situations that are being forced upon us. Now, I've always thought throughout the years that the world would never change by choice. It would also not change by some person or group of persons forcing it to change. It's too complex a world to accept or embrace change that is unwanted voluntarily. People have to want to change for a change to take place. Yet, although a lot of people nowadays really want to change, there are so many who were totally against change that making it work was very difficult. Making change work was very difficult. So I knew that only when we're forced to change will we change as a people, as a humankind. Only when we're forced to change. And what are the two most powerful forces of change? Number one, topmost, number one, economy. Your personal economy. The amount of money you got, what you got to live with. Number one force of change. Maybe even more importantly is the environment. After all, if you live somewhere where your house will be flooded and floating away, you're forced to change. You can't sit in your living room with water up to your ankles and say, I'm not leaving here, I'm not going to change. You're going to be forced to change. So now we see two incredibly global, powerful forces forcing us to change. So let's revisit community in that light. Because if you're forced to change in these ways, you'll only find strength in community. If you look back, actually, I have a very valuable resource. My parents lived through the Great Depression of the 1930s. They had firsthand experience of what it was like to live at that time, what it was like to be part of that time. As my father said, he was a child, you know, young child and then a teenager. For him, it was okay. That's what he thought. That's what was. He just accepted it. And from his point of view, it was interesting because there was a lot of community. People got together more. They also worked together more. Because alone, nobody could survive. Now in this present society, it's easy to be isolated. That's one of the symptoms of the modernity of the time. It's easy to be isolated. Because society facilitates your isolation. You can live in a flat somewhere, go to work somewhere, come home, live your life alone. But when there's an intensely powerful force disrupting that facility for isolation, you have to find a way to work together. And there is no greater impetus for community than being forced to accept community. And What's really nice about it is that when you're forced into something, you find a way to deal with it. Humans are very expert at adapting. They can find a way to deal with anything. When I'm feeling very depressed about this, I have to tell myself, and I do tell myself, whatever happens, I can deal with it. I sit together with Kamala, we say, whatever happens, we can deal with it. And we reach out to others and say, whatever happens, we can deal with it. Just think about the assets we have. We have really the only asset is people. The only real asset that's real is people. Money can go. Your house can be washed away. War can destroy and will. Because war is the natural reaction of all of these, shall we say, frustrations. And also sometimes they're used as a diversion. We've seen often that when governments are having an impossible time to deal with all of the problems in their country economically, they make a war. And when they make a war, people kind of forget about the fact that they're suffering like anything. Now, war or economic problems or environmental problems and so on, this is all a question of consciousness. And if you think about it, that consciousness has this idea that me, this egoistic entity, me, I am more important than you. I am the most important person, or maybe my family. But outside of that, it's only what I can get out of you that's important. So it's this idea of this egoistic mentality that says, I am the most important. I am that which is the most powerful ingredient in my life. Yet, if you think about it, when we're forced into these situations where we're struggling, we start to understand that other people are more important to us. Other people are the means by which we can survive. For example, when people are forced to work together, they kind of like it. It becomes a community spirit. They feel a great connection. They feel this bondage of connection. You've seen it in disasters and catastrophes, where people work together to make the catastrophe, resolve the catastrophe or the problem. Traditionally, how did people work together? They grew food. Yeah, everybody might have had their little garden here and there, but they would work together growing food, or they would share it. You grow the tomatoes, I grow the zucchinis, we trade. Or maybe you have a cow and we make some milk trade. Because really, if you think about it, the assets, the real assets, the food you eat, the clothes you wear, these are organic things. Of course, if you wear nylon clothes, that's another thing. But your cotton or your wool, the blankets you sleep under, or the food you eat. Unless you eat plastic food, I don't know. Nowadays from China, you can get a lot of plastic food. But it's organic. So you can always grow and share and trade and barter. You've got your body. You've got your abilities. You can do things and share your abilities and so on. And as we are forced more and more to accept the fact that we do not live alone, we are not the center of our universe, that we are above all social beings. At that time, we understand the importance of community. We seek it out. So, the situation in the world today is doing far more than I ever could to bring together people in community. Because factually, one is being forced to that community. Forced to accept that community. And the basis of all community is to take care of each other. And what do we need the most? We need some food. We need clean water. We need shelter. We need health. We need companionship. In community, there can be these things very solidly. So, even though maybe even right now you don't understand, or maybe somebody doesn't understand the need for this, but I see it really strongly that this is the number one need of all needs. That's why we're broadcasting again. Okay, I tried it. Me alone and me one-on-one. I was one-on-one-ing a lot. Me alone and me one-on-one. It wasn't the same. Thirsting for community. Because we have a community, a worldwide community of people. I mean, here we are broadcasting the first time in a year. I figured nobody would even know that it's happening. I got piles of listeners here, so many points of listening. Many with multiple groups or because we want this. We want this community. I think we feel it very strongly now because we really have no choice. This idea that we have to work together. This is no longer an option. Maybe some of us haven't caught on yet, but it's not an option anymore to live as a hermit. And perhaps at one point in time, we can't even live in cities. Pretty shocking. I mean, after all, if there are many, many, many problems economically, how are you going to pay for those places? You're going to want to live somewhere where you can grow food, be together with others, have some community, and so on. Now, I think one of the most important, in fact, if not the most important aspect to community, is this feeling to cooperate, to do whatever you have to do to compromise, to work together, to reciprocate, to accept others for what they are, to accept ourselves for what we are. All of these things that we've talked about for years, all of these things are the prerequisites for community. You cannot have a community if we as individuals are not solid in ourselves. If we don't accept ourselves, if we don't accept what we are, we cannot work together with others because we have to accept them as they are. It seems to me the greatest problem that we have is accepting ourselves and accepting others for what they are, not what we want them to be. Because we have this incredible capacity to demand of ourselves to be a certain way and to demand of others to be a certain way. We demand of ourselves to be some way, we demand of others to be some way, and thus we are filled with demands. This idea of being filled with demands on ourselves and others is born of a dissatisfaction of what is. We don't like to accept what is, so we fight against it by demanding it to be something else than what it is. So we don't like what is what we are, so we fight against ourselves and demand something else. We don't like what others are, so we fight against them to mold them according to our vision of what they should be. And you can just imagine, we have us molding others into what we think they should be, while we're thinking what we should be. And thus we have a feedback loop of inappropriate demands and incorrect perceptions. And therefore, we find it very hard to work together. We find it almost impossible to live together. Now, I know that we've talked about this before, and I have tried over the years to talk about unique things, to try to have the discussion something unique every week. And I tell you, it was kind of killing me to try to be unique. I mean, after all, you run out of things to say. I mean, you can scratch your head and pull your hairs and search and research, but there's not that many unique things. These themes are repeating themes. And yet, I guess you just have to hear them again. I guess I have to hear them myself again. I have to discuss them again with myself. Or try to put them in a context which is important and valuable for everybody, but is that even possible? I don't know. I've seen people struggling with writing because I had to go through the struggle of trying to write. And I've read a lot of books, of course, I review them. And I saw that there was a lot of very good stuff out there, but none of it really original. None of it unique. My dentist once asked me, what do you think you can teach? Are you teaching something new? And I said, well, I don't think there is anything new, and I don't think there is anything you can teach. I see my task is to facilitate other people understanding what they've already got, to help everybody see what's already there. In other words, to expand awareness. And expanding awareness is not something that happens just because you talk about it. It's not that by talking you can expand awareness. It's a question of bringing out that which is natural in everybody's lives, to bring out their own personal internal awareness of themselves and thus fan their capacity to be aware of others. When you're very aware of yourself, you're very aware of others. Animals are very interesting examples of this. They have a very highly attuned awareness. It's practically, I suppose, based on their survival. It's part of their DNA. If they are not totally aware, they can be killed. Yet, if you look at them, their highly attuned awareness goes hand in hand with a very deep self-awareness. They're very aware of themselves. They're very aware of how they feel. They're very aware of what they're perceiving. It's because they don't have these very complex minds that humans have. We are constantly trying to forget about what we're aware of. We're constantly trying to divert our consciousness from the present. So we're constantly seeking out things to make us forget. To make us forget the right now. And thus, naturally, because we are not so aware of what we are, how we feel, how we think, what we are thinking about, we naturally don't have a conception of others. Because we're not personally aware, we're not aware of others. Or if we are aware of ourselves of something, for example, we see others as similarly concerned about the same things as us. We see other people as we see ourselves. We think other people think like we think. We think other people act like we think, act. If I was to respond in this way, other people will respond in the same way. And when they don't, we get upset because something's wrong. I find this personally amazing. I've seen throughout the years how people just see what they want to see. They see and they conceive and they are aware according to their own personal desire. So considering this, how can you actually teach anything? So I don't think of myself like a teacher. I think of myself like a facilitator. Maybe you can teach mathematics. I don't know. But I think that the greatest gift you can give is to facilitate others by being of service to them so that they can understand and be aware and develop as they want, according to what they are, according to their desires, according to their feeling, their love, to manifest themselves according to what they are, to just allow their true spiritual nature to manifest, and to therefore give the gift of their spiritual consciousness to others. Because ultimately, there is nothing else you can give. When you work together, when you have community, it means you are investing into the community your spiritual energy to facilitate others as they will facilitate you. You can't go into the idea of community with the idea of exploitation. You have to go into the community with the spirit of sharing your energy and facilitating to be of service. And then it all works out. But as soon as one goes into a community with the idea of taking, not of sharing, there's conflict. So in this world today, the economic community was based on taking. Even if there was sharing, it was really on the basis of what to share with others to get more. There was this motivated sharing. But this consciousness collapsed when everybody wanted to take. The idea is to transform that 180 degrees. In whatever community you find yourself, in your local area, wherever you may find your community of people, to share, to have in your consciousness the first and foremost idea that you will give, you will share, you will reciprocate by facilitating other persons' development. To facilitate. And in this way, the community will work. Community will work under all conditions. Even in conditions where there's not economic fluency, economic flow. Because when one wishes to share oneself, one's spiritual energy, which is based on this desire to be of service, to share love, to assist when needed, everything works out very well. And I know that we've revisited this point many times, but since we're now coming to the point where we're going to have no choice but to work together, let's just prepare our consciousness so that we can do so. And when we do that, we will find our lives develop, I would suppose, in a manner which will allow us to be able to deal with it. Allow us to be able to deal with it. Because without dealing with it, we're going to have a really hard time. And I tell you, be confident. Because there's nothing we can't deal with as a people, as a community, as spiritual beings. There's nothing we can't deal with. Maybe we can't deal with it successfully in some other kind of a definition, but there's nothing we can't deal with appropriately. Even failure. And that's our success. Question is, community is very important, but it's also very difficult to begin. And the questioner says that determination and some enthusiasm can make the first step. And that there have been different kinds of communities in history, some spiritual ones, then that person is asking, how can we evaluate them as good or bad? And then goes on to say that actually the question is, what kind of community can be the example for nowadays people? And then there's a comment that actually all civilization began from community, but ended in isolation and exploitation. And what we can really do to save the ecological situation, I suppose it meant the environmental. Okay, that's a lot of things all at once, but I feel that you can't really judge or evaluate communities as good or bad. I mean, of course you can do anything you want. But the only community that really works, and I'm talking about over long periods of time, and works in the sense that it fulfills the needs of the people who live within that community. The only community that actually works is one where it's required, first of all. People are getting out of it what they need. And it functions properly. That's what this idea of it working, of it functioning properly, of it actually making sense. This is the basis of community. Like, for example, if you look at communities created by spiritual organizations, these communities are created on philosophical ideals. That we believe like this, and all the people who live in our community also believe like this. And the success of the community, initially anyway, is seen on the maintenance of everybody believing in a certain way. And that the ideals of the community are maintained. And in those communities, you almost always saw individuals come, individuals go very rapidly. And people not developing. People being frustrated because their needs weren't being met. Because a community based on ideals alone doesn't deal with the individuals. It's more concerned with the ideal rather than the individual. Now, this is the main crux of the breakdown of community. A community is judged on the basis of whether or not It meets the needs of the people in the community. Does it meet their economic needs? Does it meet their social needs? Does it keep them healthy and prosperous? Are they growing in the community? Or at least, are they satisfied? Therefore, communities cannot be based on some kind of philosophical ideal. Communities should be based on the ideal of taking care of the people in the community. If you look at actually a Varnashram society, that community was based on solid economic principles, solid social principles, solid political principles, solid educational principles, and the whole thing was within a spiritual context. But the spiritual context was not everything. It was the glue, but it was not that which held together the fundamental ingredients of the structure. The structure was based on extremely practical things. Labor and income and protection and knowledge. Just think about that. A community that works has to be one that supports the needs of the community. It supports the members of the community. And ultimately, if it cannot support the members, it's failed as a community. Now, this idea of creating community really means that you're creating a way that everybody can prosper. So it has to be based on economic growth, has to be based on taking care of the needs of the people. These very basic principles have to be there. So therefore, I repeat, making a community on the basis of the fact that everybody thinks similarly is never going to work. Okay, if they think similarly in the sense of we're going to grow food together, or we're going to make money together, or we're going to do something to support ourselves together, that's okay. That's not what I mean. But that everybody has to agree on their different philosophical ideas. I don't mean ideals. You can share the ideal of peace. You can share the ideal of prosperity. You can share the ideal of a clean, safe neighborhood. You can share the ideal of education and growth and development. But you can't share the ideal that everybody has to think the same way. I mean, you may embrace spirituality, even similarly, but you have to allow everybody to think the way they wish, to have their own personal ownership and responsibility, where every individual is taking care of taking care of themselves and contributing to the community. Therefore, the way to get freed from this isolation and exploitation is to allow everyone and facilitate everyone's taking care of themselves. To simply supply what is needed. And when you supply, let's say, the grains, and others buy it from you or trade with you, you get what you need. or when you supply protection and others pay you, you get what you need. So you supply what is needed, you get what you need. It's the whole basis of any society. Even, I know the idea of Marx or Engels was each according to their, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. But that's not very revolutionary thought. That's not a unique idea. That's also capitalism. I do what I can do, you buy it. From me according to what I can do, to me according to the value of what I've given. Now, this communist ideal was based on something else, really, that if I couldn't give much, I would still get. But that's very difficult to arrange in any society where you're not part of the same family. So socialism is there. The government takes from all according to what they produce and gives to everybody and takes care of all. But to do that, everybody had to be restricted and the same. Because if there were great variances in the economic situation, it would be very difficult to control that. But that didn't work because it wasn't natural. A community has to be natural. It cannot be forced. You cannot have some philosophical ideal and force it on others that you must do this because it's for the greater good. A natural community is to allow everybody to grow according to what they are and to give according to what they are. That's why that ancient Vedic system was so cool. If you had the capacity to make billions and be a billionaire, go right ahead. But give a lot of charity. Also support the government. Support the educators, support the government. The idea being that there's freedom to be natural according to what you are. Freedom to grow according to what your capacity is. And it was within a structure that actually worked. And when there is such an ideal, to make it work, everything works out. But when there's this ideal that we must do it like this, it has to break down. Because there'll always be people who don't fit in that mold. So for a community to work, it has to be natural. That means you don't first create a community and then stick the people in it. That's a very important point. You don't start with some kind of like detached structural ideal and then fill the positions in it and reject those who don't fit. A real community is made first and foremost of people. And the nature of the community depends on the people who are in it. That was the model throughout time. Tribal organization is based on that. Villages are based on this. Throughout time, the basic structure is based on that. Like a family. You don't, you know, husband and wife don't get together and then they make some kind of plan. They're going to write down a plan. Our family is going to be just like this. And then they decide they're going to need, you know, 5 girls and 6 boys to do that. So then they go out and do that. First of all, they don't know whether they're going to have girls or boys in advance. And second of all, the girls and boys may not be all healthy and capable. And third of all, they may not be at all inclined to do what you want them to do. So you get married, you make a family. Whatever the kids are, you deal with it. And you adjust your arrangement or your expectations according to what your family is. Every family is its own thing. It wasn't molded to become that way. So every community is like a family. It's just the people who are in it. Now, why would somebody become part of a community? Well, because there's something in it for them. Like, for example, if you have, let's say, some kind of place and you have a business and you hire people or people come to work for you, and then they live in the area because that's where they're employed. You have a community. And because people need things, there are other persons who are employed to satisfy their needs. That's the only way in which a community can grow. There has to be a reason to be there. And a philosophical reason is fine, but it won't last. There has to be something in it for me that is the very basis of my life. And that's why when, for example, it's going to be difficult to eat, having an agrarian community, a community where there's land, where you can grow food, is going to be in everybody's interests. And at that time, there won't be a problem maintaining a community. Because it's just something you've got to do. You can't do anything else. You've got to do it. You've got to live. And while you're there, you make friends. And while you're there, you have families. And while you're there, the families intermarry and have children. Like in the West, in American Western, when they civilized the so-called, when they populated the West, people went in their wagons across the country, and then they stopped in a spot where they thought it was nice. They made a community. And today they're cities. Because other people said, hey, that's a nice place, I'll come too. And then they married and they had children, and their children had children, and it just grew and grew and grew. That's the only way to have community. It's actually very simple. And that's why the whole point of my discussion was, when you're forced to, you will. Because when you have to make a community, you will. Because it's in your interest to do so. And you won't go to a community which doesn't fulfill your needs. You'll only go to a community where it fulfills your needs. Now, why should we wait until we are forced? That's the question. Well, obviously you shouldn't, but, you know, I can't make you make a community. And who am I to talk? Here I am living in this place, far away from anybody I know. And it's amazing. I'm living in a place where 30 minutes from me, there's a huge places of land, 1,000 people, all the reasons on earth to have a community, and they don't. Figure this out. Figure this out. I'm in a place where there should obviously be community, And there really isn't. Why? Because they're not getting their needs fulfilled as individuals within that structure. It's very interesting. It's not something that you can make a plan and then have it be. It's just something that becomes because of need. Naturally, it all begins with land. If you have land, then everything begins. If you don't have land, then you can't have a place where people come. But then on the land, you have to have some employment. Then you have to have places for living. Then you have to have places where you buy clothes and where you can get medical things and etc. And when I say forced, right now, who's going to take their money and buy land? Amazingly so, there's a huge place right outside of Moscow, and it could be done very nicely there, but nobody can do it unless they're forced. Much better to, you know, sit in a car all day in a traffic jam. That's much more fun. Here's an interesting question also. This question, and I know that there's a lot of questions about this. I'll deal with this other one first. Rules. Regulations. Now, if you look in a, let's go back to that example of a Varnashram community. It's not like everybody did what they wanted to. There was law. There was law, and it was enforced. In every community, you live within a country, and the country has laws. So therefore, from the very start, you cannot impose laws which are different than the laws of the country within you live. So, as far as law is concerned, you don't need to create new ones. You don't need to make new ones. You may have, for example, laws, or we shouldn't call them laws, but you should have, we should call them, let's say, principles or guidelines or even a structure within businesses. Like if you want to work in this business, you have to do like this. You can also, there's also social laws. Maybe even not even written down. And certainly there's religious laws or religious principles. I'm not saying that community can be devoid of spiritual principles. I never tried to say that. It's very important that community be based on some kind of spiritual ideals. But I don't mean ideals that you have to be exactly like this, otherwise it doesn't work. The ideal is that you should be the best you can be, that you should give what you can give, that you should grow as you should grow. And the ideal being that we'll all help each other do that. And the ideal of being a facilitating spirituality. But not that if you don't do like this, then you don't fit here. But then again, why would, for example, somebody who likes to eat meat all the time live in a community of vegetarians? why would a drunkard live in a community of people who don't drink? It doesn't make sense. They're not getting their needs fulfilled. There's no bars in the community. There's no butcher shops in the community. In other words, that when a group of people get together because they have a similar idea, then they can live together peacefully because they have that ideal, and people who have a similar ideal come. Later on, they may find that somebody comes in, let's say they even are vegetarians, somebody comes in who maybe eats meat or eats fish or whatever, and they don't care. They say it's their house, they can do what they want. They're nice people. If you make a community and start insisting that everybody be like this, well, it might not work. Because then you have to interview people. What do you eat? Oh, you can't work here. Because after all, eating meat is not the only sin, quote unquote, according to some people. And why do you say that sin is worse than this sin, or that one is better than this one? Then you have to be the thought police, or you have to have spy cameras. What are you doing at home? And oh, you can't do like that. You can't live here. At the point you start demanding things like this, your community will not last. I know that's hard to swallow for fanatical religionists. The certain Christians want that if you're going to live in this community, you've got to go to church, and you've got to read the Bible, and you've got to follow it. And if you don't, you're rejected from the community. We've seen that amongst various religious groups. You must be like this, otherwise you cannot stay here. Maybe even you work good, but doesn't matter. You've made some blasphemy. You've done something wrong. You've made a mistake. You cannot stay. In other words, there are very complex issues here on your demands. If you make demands that are over and above the basic demands of any society that exists, that works, you're going to have trouble. In a Varnashram society, they didn't demand anything. There were laws. Maybe at one point there were laws, no animal slaughter. Or at least no cows. Because there were these regulations on how to kill other animals. And people read the scriptures, and there were these problems with Lord Rama and others eating meat. So there were many difficulties, yet they worked together. There's law, sure, but at the present time, the law is given to us by the countries within which we live. We have to follow that law or object in a manner which is acceptable. So I think the main hang-up people have is the demand they place on people who are supposed to be part of a community. And therefore I say force, because when you're forced to do it, your demands kind of fade away. You just kind of embrace whatever the need dictates, and make things work in whatever way you can. And you adapt, you allow, you compromise. You don't insist, you embrace, you facilitate. For some people, this kind of open-mindedness is beyond their capacity. And for those people, they may have a very small community, maybe, somewhere, that might work. I doubt it. Because there'll always be a disappointment. Even amongst your very tightly controlled community, there'll always be somebody who does something they're not supposed to. Because all humans are fallible. All humans make mistakes. If you embrace the human, you embrace the capacity to make mistakes. And then you have to deal with that. And somehow or another make it work. And I think that's really important. And that you yourself have your spiritual ideals. If I live in a community, I'm not going to stop having my spiritual ideals. I'm not going to stop having my spirituality. And I'm going to share it when it's appropriate, when somebody wishes. And I'm going to embrace others and try to assist others. And what I am will rub off on others or influence others. But at the point at which I insist and demand that others become like me, otherwise they have to go, that causes the breakdown of society. I may insist that people follow law. That's another thing. And a community can make its own law to a certain extent. Like I live in a housing community here, and that community has laws. And so long as those laws do not contradict the state laws or the federal laws, these laws are acceptable in this organization. So you can make some guidelines or laws in your community, but that has to be legally organized that way. But do you realize what this place would be if they made a law that you have to eat this and you cannot eat that? You have to act like this, I mean, in a religious way, and you may not do like that. You can say you can't paint your house purple with yellow circles on it. That you can say because that affects everybody. You can say that you can't have horses in your backyard that go out and, you know, eat other people's grass. Or you can say that you can't, you know, knock down a tree onto your neighbor's property. Or these kind of laws are for everybody's protection. So the laws you make are those which embrace the protection of all people in the community. Not laws to reject and isolate people because of their thoughts or what they put in their mouth or even what they might say. You understand the difference? Obviously, I have not dealt with every single possible thing. There's thousands and millions of permutations of right and wrong and belief and structure and law. It's the most complicated thing there is. You can engage thousands and millions of scholars to figure this out, and they still can't figure it out. But the basic principle is you have to do what works for the sake of the greater good. I hope that helped. I clicked the wrong button here. I hope that helped the understanding there of those issues. And then there's the question, in any community there are egoists, those who will try to grab the power and cheat people and exploit them. Yep, it's true. You know, I don't got an answer to that. My idea would be to somehow or another bring community pressure on a person like that so that they can understand how their actions are working against themselves. Government and civilization, as it's organized in countries and states, this is not community. This is rather national incorporations for the sake of taxation and defense and maintenance and roads and all that kind of jazz. When we're talking about community now, in this discussion, we're talking about smaller groups, kind of like villages, or even a larger family for the sake of the protection of everybody. And as far as within that exploitation, even in a family, you have abusive fathers or abusive mothers or insane children or you can have any variety of insanity. You have to deal with it, that's all. How you deal with it, there's no rule, it depends. Depends on the situation. There's no book that says this is how you deal with somebody who's an egoist. Because every egoist is uniquely egoistic. They might not be uniquely obnoxious, that's another thing, but they're uniquely, the manner in which they're uniquely obnoxious is unique, not the obnoxiousness itself. Here's an interesting question. The psychological compatibility of people in communities, because in many communities there are people who are so incredibly different. Well, first of all, you cannot, enforce or to cultivate psychological compatibility. You'll always have strange people. You'll always have people who are eccentric. You'll always have people who are totally different from other people. And you can't really change them or insist or even throw them out because, I mean, who will decide who's too weird? Who will decide who's too strange? I mean, then it becomes sometimes a witch hunt, or they used to burn witches for that reason. Because they, you know, they worked with herbs. Or they dealt with demigods or whatever, God knows. But the responsibility when there's that incompatibility is for the individual to grow and for the individual to learn to adapt. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be happy with it or that you're going to work together with such a person. You may respectfully avoid them. In a community, it doesn't mean you have to work together. That's a mistake. You may work together in labor because you have to work together. You're both employed in the same company. But in living, you can avoid each other. And maybe sometimes people will fight. Then it's the community's responsibility to somehow or another assist them in that. In other words, you can't enforce psychological compatibility. It's something that has to grow. And many times it means it's just something you have to accept and deal with. And not so simple that. Here I got a response. Actually, this idea is very encouraging, and I hope there will be a time when we'll be forced to live like that. Well, you don't have to hope too much. It's coming fast. Right now, you can make community amongst where you live. You know, so you can have your Moscow community of people that you take care of each other. Your St. Petersburg community, your Buenos Aires community, your Warsaw community, or wherever you are. A community of people who just, you know, work together, like a club, for instance. The work together, take care of each other club. I don't know.